following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 203, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm Anessa Muyeens, along with Brad Ludwig, and playing the part of Dave Nelson tonight is Gregor Sprag, like Hag.
Nope. Sprag, like Greg. Sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Because I always want to say Sprag.
Yeah, that's close enough. So, as long as you're within.
So is it like Sprague?
Yeah, like Greg and Sprague, like they rhyme.
So essentially your last name is from Wisconsin, where they say bag as opposed to bag.
And here we
go. There you go. There you go. Midwest.
Yes. Or at least okay, I pronounce my last name.
All right.
This week on Midwest Talk.
And thanks to Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome, and you can find it at soundcloud.com/monkeywarhol. This is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearance in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, real life.
You don't sound excited about it at all. What's wrong with you?
My real life has been filled with migraine. It's hard to be enthusiastic. But anyway, before we start things off with the news, my question, which I found from a post that Dave had done on the Galactic Network podcast Google Plus page in February 2015, is, would you rather travel in time to a different dimension or a great distance in space? Who goes first?
The guest goes first. What do you say?
Can't I just have a TARDIS and do all three?
It's one or the other. Though by traveling in space, you're traveling through time.
Yeah. I would probably do the different dimension just because, like, although fundamentally I think that would kill me, it would still be cool to be like, okay, you guys, like, I will just come back and no one will ever believe me, so I'll be put in a mental institution, and that would be how I end. Like, that would be the end of my movie.
You would essentially become Dorothy from Return to Oz.
I would essentially be Doctor Strange in the first part of the movie, but instead of training and learning stuff, I just start growing my hair out and look like Rick from Rick and Morty, but with a straight jacket, is what would happen.
Seems legit.
Have you seen Return to Oz?
No.
Highly recommended.
Absolutely disturbing.
Dorothy gets put into a mental house because she won't stop talking about Oz. So there you go. That was the reason for the reference.
They kick it off by attempting to do electroshock therapy on a little girl.
So yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. I do like it. Kind of creepy, especially the Wheelers. So anyway,
TikTok rules. All right.
Brad?
Oh, another dimension. Next.
How to go to the Southern Hemisphere. I'm happy. What? I want to see the Southern constellations.
Oh, I thought you were like, oh God, it's really cold here in Wisconsin. Because, well, it kind of is.
No, I mean, I guess you're kind of looking off far into space, but you know, like I'd be happy to even just make it down to, like, I don't know, Australia. New Zealand.
Seems legit.
Otherwise, I would say I wouldn't mind traveling a great distance in space just to see what else.
I now want to see that fan-made Doctor Who short. You have the Doctor, all of time and space. Where do you want to go? Southern Hemisphere. Really? That's it?
I'm easy to please. What can I say?
You're not wrong.
All right. Love you. Thank you.
In the news,
A UFO crashed through the Arctic ice 6 years ago and has been operating in the Arctic Sea ever since. Bum, bum, bum.
What?
I know. This according to the newly released documents made available from the State Department emails by way of Russian FSB's WikiLeaks division. I don't know what FSB stands for.
Something
Hunters in a remote town in the Canadian Arctic reported a mysterious sound coming from the sea floor. The Canadian Navy, such as it is, has promised to investigate the hum, whose origin is uncertain. Hunters such as Paul Casa, a member of the Legislative Assembly, says whatever the cause, it's frightening marine mammals and other animals. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Arctic Sea, mysterious snowballs are starting to appear on beaches. Even older residents have never seen the phenomenon before, and while there is a scientific explanation, we wonder if both mysteries could in fact be the same otherworldly cause. You know, I like the idea of aliens making snowballs because it means they want to have fun. What's wrong with that? They just want to have a snow fight.
Seems legit.
All right. So the pinging sound, sometimes also described as a hum or a beep, has been heard in Fury and Hecla Strait, about 90 miles northwest of the hamlet of Igloolik, last summer. That's one of the major hunting areas in the summer and winter because it's a polynya, an open water surrounded by ice that's abundant with sea mammals, he said. And this summer, there were hardly any. And this became a suspicious thing. The noise is emanating from the sea floor, according to remarks Casa made last month in the Nunavut legislature. As for the Snowsaurus eggs, according to news reports, the snowballs first formed in late October after water in the Gulf of Ob rose and covered the beach with ice. Just as kids roll snowballs along a snow-covered surface to create bigger spherical creations, ice on the beach rolled along the sand as the tides receded, creating the frozen orbs. It's a rare natural phenomenon. Sergei Lysenkov, a spokesperson for the Arctic and Antarctic Research Institute, AARI, told the Siberian Times. As a rule, grease ice forms first, slush, then a combination of the action of the wind, the outlines of the coastline, and the temperature may lead to the formation of such balls. Hey, check it out. I'm saying balls on the show.
Balls.
Area residents said the phenomenon was a surprise and had not happened previously. Even old-timers say they see this phenomenon for the first time, Valerie Akulov from the village administration told the Siberian Times. A similar phenomenon has occurred along Lake Michigan, where boulder-sized ice balls can form in winter months. I want to see these ice balls. They sound fascinating.
Oh. I'm curious to know if that's a Michigan side or Wisconsin side exclusive.
It doesn't say. It would be kind of nice. Like, maybe it's just up in the UP. I have no idea.
It's up in Mackinac City, just covered.
Just hanging out. So, anyway, skipping ahead. On the night of October 4th, 1967, at about 11:20 p.m. Atlantic Daylight Time, it was reported that something had crashed into the waters of Shag Harbor. At least 11 people saw a low-flying lit object head towards the harbor. Multiple witnesses reported hearing a whistling sound like a bomb, then a whoosh, and finally a loud bang. The object was never officially identified and was therefore referred to as an unidentified flying object in the Government of Canada documents. The Canadian military became involved in a subsequent rescue/recovery effort. The initial report was made by local resident Lori Wickens and four of his friends. Driving through Shag Harbor on Highway 3, they spotted a large object descending into the waters of the harbor. Once at a better vantage point, Wickens and his friends saw an object floating 1,000 feet offshore in the waters of Shag Harbor. Wickens contacted the RCMP detachment in Barrington Passage and reported that he had seen a large airplane or small airliner crash into the waters of Shag Harbor. Assuming an aircraft had crashed within about 15 minutes, 10 RCMP officers arrived at the scene. But before any attempt at rescue could be made, the object started to sink and disappeared from view. But by the next morning, the RCMP had determined that no aircraft were missing. The cause of the incident was never solved. But now we have ice balls. So there you go.
Balls
made of ice. Thoughts?
That's messed up.
Yeah.
It is.
How heavy are the ice balls?
You know, it doesn't really say. It talks about, again, how they churn in waves and become ice spheres, and I skipped that part. And the little bit that I read was just, it's happened before in this part of the globe, like UFOs hanging out, sinking down into the water. So I don't know, maybe they're making a village very slowly. They're going to build igloos out of the ice that they're creating. But they're having the problem in that the ice keeps wanting to float. I'm sorry, aliens. You planned poorly.
They're just there. They get it all set up. And then they're going to put the final piece.
See, I really think that's what's happening.
I can see that happening. I should be, again, another funny thing to see. Just like they're speaking their language and then all of a sudden they get it done. And you got the like the one alien just over there going, come on. You know this is going to, you've done this constantly. You know it's just going to float up. It's just going to go that way.
Yeah, damn it, Tim.
Yeah.
Why can't we stick to making blocks out of sand? I mean, really.
I love the fact that Brad giggled at balls but didn't say anything about Shag Harbor.
Well, you know.
That's a legit thing.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number, area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Google now has a Google Mars that you can look at the surface of Mars, essentially, like you can with Google Earth. And people are finding all sorts of crazy stuff. And now they're finding 3-mile-high tower structures in a row. Now, Anessa, if we're going to talk about Mars and aliens, who would you think that we're going to be talking about right now?
Georgios something, the ancient aliens dude.
He's number two. Who's the other person?
Don't make me say it. Don't make me say it's Scott like Waring.
It's like we have this weird relationship with Scott C. Waring. Yes. Here we go. UFO enthusiast forums are buzzing with excitement following a bizarre claim by a YouTube alien hunter that while looking at Google Mars, he stumbled upon convincing evidence that technologically advanced alien life once existed on the red planet. According to the alien hunter, NASA images of the Martian surface constructed using data collected from the Mars Global Surveyor and Mars Odyssey missions provide conclusive evidence of the presence of three huge... What? Who the wrote this thing? 3-mile-high towers standing in a perfectly straight row on Mars. Okay. Now...
Actually, that sounds, I understood that more because at first I'm like, oh, they're all towers that are 3 miles high, not 3 1-mile-high towers.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I would invite you to go to this Inquisitor.com article and check out the structures, which they're saying looks like vibrators for all intents and purposes. You know, at the base, you turn the little thing at the base there and you adjust the speed. I know too much about this. All right. Say, although skeptics dismissed the claim, saying the alien hunters have mistaken natural features of the Martian surface, such as eroded rock formations, for artificial structures, alien hunters insisted that the mathematical precision of the arrangement of the objects in a row proved they were artificial structures constructed on purpose by intelligent beings and not random features of the natural Martian landscape. This discovery, quote unquote discovery, was made December 6th. So just as of right now, today is December 8th. This is just 2 days ago. This would have been Tuesday. While studying the...
Do you want me to say the name?
Sure.
So according to Mundo Desconocido...
Yes, that guy. while studying the Terra Meridiani region of the Martian surface on Google Mars... I don't even want to say this. Eagle-eyed investigators spotted a row of huge towers that show clear evidence of being artificial structures. That is, structures built by intelligent technological beings. All right. Just because we haven't done a screen share in a while, and for our YouTube viewers, and I want you all to understand that when I... say what it looks like, you'll look at this and you'll go, oh, okay, that's what he means. They look like vibrators. It's ridiculous.
Now, is this footage from the Google Mars thing, or are these just 3D renderings that they did?
3D renderings that they did?
Yeah, I really... I'm going to turn this down because I know you guys can't hear what I'm playing on the video here, but.
I mean, they look like really, really tall pyramids. Or like, you know, cone, like the, like ice cream cones.
Feel bad for the people who are just listening to the audio and not being able to see this. Please, I invite you to go to our YouTube channel and check out this particular.
Well, here, I'll try to do my best to help to describe them. They're, if you think of the mathematical, you know, the circle for a base and like that style pyramid, that's what they are. They're just really like skinny but tall, like pyramid shapes and all that.
But really, it looks like somebody has from within the surface of Mars started to poke a fork.
Yeah.
Out of the outer crust of Mars.
Yeah. Now it is weird and interesting that they are, I guess, equidistant apart from each other. Like they form a line and stuff. Or another thing I think of would be icicles. Like they look like upside down icicles.
Sure.
Just differential erosion. That's what that is.
And that's exactly what I'm thinking. And Anessa has more experience with. Oh, good Lord, don't expand the size of this monstrosity. Please stop, for love of all that is holy. I don't want to see this anymore. Okay. So, yeah, it really does look like it's a form of erosion, but Scott C. Waring and this other, and I'm going to butcher it. I don't want to butcher it. Mundo Desconocido?
Yes.
I kind of got it right. Me with my horrible gringo mouth massacring Spanish. Okay, let's continue on. In a December 7th post to his UFO sightings daily blog, UFO hunter, that guy, I'm not going to even say his name.
Scott C. Waring. I have no beef with him.
Thanks, Gregor.
Yeah, declared that the latest discovery supports previous claims that the Martian surface is replete with material evidence of advanced ancient civilizations.
Waring.
He once again accused NASA of deliberately trying to keep the public in the dark about evidence of intelligent extraterrestrial life in our solar system. Quote, they keep the public in the dark because NASA wants to get there first to lay claim and to keep the U.S. number one. Otherwise, a tiny country like Taiwan could make a manned mission to Mars. I'm not going to... Okay. Taiwan, I don't think, has
only
enough...
if they're making the parts for the spaceship for America or China.
They really don't... I don't see them getting a manned mission to Mars before Russia, China, or the U.S. or India.
Or India, I was going to say.
The kind of the major space faring superpowers at this point in time. They don't want anybody else but the U.S. to make friends with an advanced alien race, gaining weapons and technologies that could give them world power overnight. Now, do you understand why NASA shuts up about life out there?
No.
No, Scott, I think you need more medication.
And I'm looking at another video that's on the Inquisitor site for this article. And there is spots of walled cities on Mars from an MRO satellite. And I'm thinking those could very well be various craters, including complex craters that have eroded away over the years, and their outer rim wall would have been blasted away from other craters that came along from the ejecta.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
We see evidence of stuff like that on the moon. We see, you know.
This is a giant Rorschach test, yeah. And this is what
you can
other people are seeing.
Whatever conclusions you want to, because there's really no way to determine whether it's right or wrong at this time. So
I'm just curious as to why people haven't made the obvious guess of these are aliens welcoming us to Mars. You know, like they're getting the broadcasts of what they're doing, like Tesla's doing, or not Tesla, SpaceX is doing with wanting to do the reusable rockets, you know, send them there and then send them back sort of deal. And they're like, here's your airport. You know, here's your spaceport.
That's helping.
That's a rough looking spaceport.
Well, you know,
it's
if they
the
don't...
first level. I mean,
you're going to upgrade draft. As time goes along. I see what you're saying.
Come on. The Wright brothers didn't start with a Boeing 747. No, they started with a kite, essentially.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. So that's where things sit. You know, we're going to see more of this, obviously, as time goes on. And now that we live even more every day in a post-factual society, people are just going to pull stuff out of their keisters and shout out, prove it, you can't!
or just make up a story and forget just, Elon Musk's name?
Yeah.
It's, like I just did not too long ago?
That's okay.
So, yeah, there you go. 3-mile-high tower structures on Mars, which are obviously could only be created by intelligent life.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
This is from natureworldnews.com. And this is scientists are developing a new telescope chip that can spy on alien life / exoplanets.
Neat.
And this is being made by some scientists from Australian National University. And they've invented a groundbreaking optical chip for telescopes that will, for the first time, allow astronomers to get a good picture of alien planets outside of the solar system despite the blinding brightness of the sun. Presently, there is no standard astronomical instrument available that can do the same. In a press release, Dr. Madden from the NAU Research School of Physics and Engineering said, and this is normally where I would do an Australian accent, but I can't do that, so we're getting my accent. The ultimate aim for our work with astronomers is to be able to find a planet like Earth that could support life. To do this, we need to understand how and where planets form inside dust clouds, and then use this experience to search for planets with an atmosphere containing ozone, which is a strong indicator of life. The optical chip, which will be presented at the Australian Institute of Physics Congress in Brisbane this December in a collaboration amongst physicists and astronomers of ANU and the researchers at the University of Sydney and Australian Astronomical Observatory, Space Daily reports. Basically, to sum up this whole article, they're making a chip that will be able to look and see space in different ways, and I freaking love this. Another quote I found down by my article says, the chip uses heat emitted from the planet to peer through dust clouds and see planets forming. Ultimately, the same technology will allow us to detect ozones from alien planets that could support life, Mr. Goldsmith said, as Eureka Alerts writes. Yeah, this is pretty cool. I'm like, another way to detect them, and we're using what, radio waves right now? We're using just about everything except for this, so let's use it.
Seems legit.
Indeed.
Use all the things to find the aliens.
We're like the paparazzi of the universe. We're just
hey, Bingbar, come here. What? No.
Taking inappropriate snapshots of everybody and anybody that I can.
I hope they have their blinds closed.
But yeah, but what do you guys think about this? What do you guys think about a new chip being made to where we could find things in different ways?
No, I think that's awesome. It gives us more ways to look out into space. I mean, yeah. We have multiple methods, but if we can expand those methods and improve them, that would greatly, I would think, improve our odds for finding life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, you look at, because one of the big applications they're using this for is to see how planets form, but then to find planets that have ozone. You know, so then it's like the inevitable mission of we got to bail and get to a new planet. What planet are we aiming for? And with that, we would be able to say, go this way, sort of deal, as opposed to, let's just do slingshots in all sorts of different directions. Whoever gets there first, send back a postcard.
Yeah. Although that's assuming that there's even anything to send a postcard to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is that.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge. Just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Hey, in 1997, in Liverpool, someone was driving around and they spotted a UFO. So we're going to talk about it. This particular person said that driving home around 3 a.m., nothing good ever happens after midnight, frankly.
Really?
Depends on what you classify as good, I guess. Say, 3 a.m., when a large black triangle aircraft hovered overhead, no noise, no lights, got out of car and watched the triangle hover above me and my passengers. I don't remember going home or even why I didn't report it the following day, but I don't even remember how I went home or how my passengers got home. The number of witnesses were 4, and the duration they list is 5 minutes, even though they don't really remember a whole lot of what happened. When they looked up at this large black triangle, it seemed to be made up of separate triangles that were inside of it. They're saying that the size of the object, the relative size, about 2 meters, arm stretched out in front of me, as big as a carriage on a train, as high as the Tower Restaurant, now used as radio tower.
All right.
Oh, it's probably just a tall building that's not really being used that they have cell towers and stuff on, perhaps.
In Liverpool.
This area that this was seen is semi-rural, nearing the beginning of the M57. I just left Copy Lane Police Station I was a criminal law legal advisor at the time, representing people who had been arrested for criminal offenses. I was giving my client and his mother and brother a lift home at the time, but I have no recollection of taking them home. My last memory of that sighting was looking up at the triangle. I like this. Other comments, rather not say.
That's just British for no.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, ask Daryl.
I'd rather not say.
Exactly.
Yes. There you go. And this person was in their 40s at the time. So he is now in his 60s. So there you go. The Liverpool Triangle that was seen after 3 a.m. when somebody needed legal representation at a police station.
With how the description thing was written, I'm like, okay, clearly they were drunk at the pub. But then going, oh, he was a criminal law legal advisor. So clearly he was getting someone who was drunk at the pub.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what I'm thinking as well. I'm glad we're on the same page. So, okay, there you go. That is the sighting that I have for this time out.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going to gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
And now, picks and warnings. Picks and warnings.
Awesome sauce. Warnings.
I think it was going to be a joint pick.
Yeah, Dave told me it was a joint pick. I do have a separate one. It's a small recommendation for a comic book because it sort of deals with a Nessa story, or at least I was reminded of it from a Nessa story, and it is a Warren Ellis comic called Trees. This is through Image Comics, and it's going to be a movie or TV show here coming up soon, but really quickly, the premise is these alien crafts have landed on Earth in select cities. They are just really tall. They vary from different lengths, and the people on Earth have decided to start calling them trees. And you are followed. You're following the people who are dealing with these trees in there, and what they are. Sorry, so that's my quick pick. But I mean, the big pick here, I think, is Invasion, the 3.5 part. Sorry, I'm a little upset about the Supergirl crossover part there. Crossover event with the CW TV shows.
Well, they had a lot of storyline stuff kind of going on, so I can forgive them for that.
It made sense, but also they started, like, it seems like there would have been better planning on wrapping up her story to then have a traditional crossover. I would even say with the Legends of Tomorrow episode, it seemed like it was more of focus on Flash and Arrow, and then here we've sort of made the primary characters for the show secondary characters behind, you know, guest stars for this episode.
Well, no, because my thought was, for whatever show it was, the core cast for that show got the primary amount of time for the most part. I mean, with Flash, we got time with Caitlin, and she, you know, got to discuss her issues with, you know, Dr. Stein, as we now find out what's going on there. But and then with Arrow, the Arrow team, that was also their 100th episode. So, I mean, it really focused on the majority of them. I don't know. I don't really think that it focused specifically on Flash and Arrow.
It seemed like, I mean, you can make, obviously, because I am making the argument, but you can make the argument that Legends of Tomorrow, where, like you said, Flash, it focused more, like it was told more through the Flash team's eyes. Arrow was Inception in a way, because it was, you know, mainly a dream sequence with the Arrow team. And then, you know, this one, it was more of the traditional crossover, where it was, you know, you had everyone, but it seemed to focus a little bit, in my opinion, on Flash and Arrow and not so much, you know, Citizen Steel or Captain Steel or, you know, Mick or any of these other, you know, any of the other characters from Legends.
No, fair enough.
Don't get me wrong. I still enjoyed the show. I still enjoyed all the episodes. They could have premiered Supergirl a week earlier to get to where they didn't have the mess, and you know, could have expanded the story a little bit more. But you know, what are you going to do?
Yep. True that. True that. All right, so you did your trees. Which part of the invasion do you want to talk about specifically?
Well, I guess since we don't, like, you guys have already done your picks, and so I figured you studied on them more. I can focus in on the Arrow one because it was cool having that be a double-edged sword there of being the crossover episode, but also being the 100th episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was cool, but we should probably start in order with the Flash, shouldn't we?
I guess we can go through the storyline.
Yeah, why don't we kind of do like a handoff sort of a thing?
Okay, well, aliens called the Dominators came down, and the Flash and Vibe went to the dimension of Supergirl to recruit her to help an alien fight against the other aliens, the good alien against the bad aliens.
Earth 35, I believe it was.
I don't remember the Earth, but it was a good Earth.
39, yeah.
Cisco gave it a thumbs up. that Supergirl has there. So, she gets introduced to everyone, which I have to say, Kara is really awesome with names because I wouldn't have remembered anybody's name. I'd be like, you there with the green hood. You there with the glasses.
No, don't lie. You would have been like Mick and went, no, skirt.
I probably would have, like, okay, skirt, haircut.
Yeah, it's Earth 38.
38, all right. Yeah, I was in the 30s. You were close.
I had the over-under.
Word.
So, but no, I thought it was really cool that they were able to introduce Supergirl into the universe. They didn't really focus too much on her. They had her help with trying to train them, because she would be the toughest opponent that they would have to be against that would be probably comparable to the Invaders, which are a species, an alien that had come like before, visited Earth before in the 1950s, and they left and now they're back and nobody really knows why at this point, which I'm sure we'll talk about why. So spoilers, if you don't want to know what happens, you might want to turn us off for a bit. And you do see some hesitation with accepting Supergirl, particularly with Oliver Queen. He's mm-hmm. not as inviting or as welcoming as the others are. He keeps his distance a bit. But no.
Shocker.
I know. Imagine that. Oliver Queen pushing everybody away. But anyway, no, I really enjoyed how they introduced all the characters and introduced the aliens and like having people figure out like why they're there. And I think they did a wonderful job with making the Dominators really creepy with the big red veiny thing on their forehead and the teeth, the piranha teeth or whatever you'd want to call them. So yeah. It was just a lot of like more of an introduction to everybody. Like, is one big group, and I feel like the other two episodes were more about actually fighting against the Invaders and, like, coming together as a team. So there was just more of a
introduction
to the whole plot.
Yeah, but then let's not forget that you had, at the end of Flash, you had, you know, because they did the whole Tarantino thing of, let's show the ending first and then show how we get here.
Right.
So it's the battle scene where it's basically everyone but so the Legends and then Kara and, you know, some of the other people from Team Arrow, the original Team Arrow team, not, you know, Ragman and Wild Dog and Evelyn, whatever her name is, Artemis, they all get mind controlled by the Dominators and they're fighting Flash and Arrow. And then they figure out how to do all this, all the things to get them to be not mind controlled, and including using Kara essentially as a wrecking ball.
Yep.
You know, cue Miley Cyrus song throughout that whole scene.
Get out of my head.
And which then led to, as you would find out at the end of the episode of Arrow, all the non-metahumans getting abducted.
Right.
Non-metahumans or aliens getting abducted, and which led to the episode for Arrow. Yeah. Where I think I'll take the ball and go talk about Arrow for now. Where you had, like Brad said, it was the 100th episode, so it was like a flashback. It all the stuff that they were saying, hearing about this made sense now, with like they're saying, oh, we're gonna have the actor who played Robert Queen come back, and
Moira.
Katie Cassidy. Yeah, Moira Queen and Katie Cassidy and all these, and you're like, wait a minute, these are people who are dead. Like, how is this? Explain yourself, Greg Berlanti. How are you going to do these things? And then you go through, and it's this alternate, like, Pleasantville universe thing that you come into. And, you know, everyone is really enjoying, sort of like enjoying their lives. You know, it was essentially what would have happened if Oliver didn't go on the boat with his dad to start the whole journey. And, you know, so we see, you know, him and I'm blanking on Dinah, on Laura Lance's, getting ready to go, you know, get married, because they never had the breakup, because he never slept with
the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, never got on the Queen's Gambit, to where he was with her sister, which is a low move. I mean, seriously, come on, that's low.
It was Oliver Queen.
And then, like, and then they go through and they finally figure out, wait a minute, I'm seeing these flashes from other people that tell there that I shouldn't be seeing here. Like, you know, like they get, I think it started with Oliver, where he's getting flashes of like training and being on the island and, you know, having these scars. And he's like, wait, I don't have scars. And it's slowly like they're breaking free of the mind control, sleeping paralysis thingy that they were under, to come out and realize, hey, we're in space, sort of thing. And they escape and are flying blind, essentially, the alien spacecraft, and then it leads to Legends of Tomorrow.
So, as the intrepid group of non-powered heroes are trying to blindly, well, they're not really flying the thing, they're sitting in a chair in their seats.
They're monkeys typing Shakespeare at that point.
Yeah, essentially. And they're just like, well, we're going to die in space now. And of course, the Wave Rider, the ship of the Legends of Tomorrow, scoops them up, and they kind of hyperspace out of that area. Much to the surprise of the folks that had just escaped. We now get to see that Citizen Steel, which is, I can't remember his first name, but Haywood. He's the grandson of the Commander Steel. He was given the ability to kind of convert his body to like organic steel, not unlike Colossus of the X-Men.
Citizen Steel.
Citizen Steel, yes. His grandfather was Commander Steel. And now he has a costume which is not too dissimilar to the costume that Citizen Steel wore in the comics, which is kind of cool. And due to things that happened in the previous episode of Legends of Tomorrow, now
Nathan Haywood.
It's Nathan Haywood. Yep, that's right. Now Ray Palmer has his Adam suit rebuilt. So now he is super powered once more and extremely happy about that. They hatch a plan to figure out why the Dominators disappeared mysteriously in 1951 as quickly as they showed up. And the team that's put together goes and witnesses the extreme ass whipping that the Dominators give the army. And Sisko is in with this group, Sisko of the Flash team.
And Felicity from Arrow.
And Felicity from Arrow. But the important thing here is in the Flash, one of the Flash things that we are kind of wrapping up is Barry changed the timeline. And Sisko does something when they go back to 1951 and he alters the timeline, trying to do something good, but he ends up doing something that ends up happening to create a situation that is far worse when they get back to present day. I don't want to give away too much. Obviously, since the shows are all continuing, they win.
What?
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. A lot of interesting little bits here and there, especially for the hardcore comic nerds that really dig on like the history of DC, especially because the Dominators are, I just did a quick thing. The Dominators first appeared in 1967 and they only appeared one more time after that before they were brought in for the Invasion comic book series. And then they showed up for about 3 years in the 5 years after reboot, the fourth volume of Legion of Superheroes. So they weren't aliens that were used too much up until the point of the original Invasion miniseries. So it was, and those characters were created by Jim Shooter, and Jim Shooter was probably about 16 years old at this time. And Jim Shooter is, he's infamous. He's not just famous. He's infamous. When he was the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, nobody liked him at all. And I think he only lasted for about 2 years. And then eventually he started Valiant Comics until those people couldn't stand him either and edged him out.
Smartest move they've ever done.
That's a show for another time. Valiant Comics is a very, very interesting thing. Anyways, to get back on track, Invasion, the whole series was a major boon for all of the CW shows. Flash had seen kind of flagging views. Arrow was okay, but not quite as good as, they lost a lot of viewers last season and it was slowly picking up, and this just blew it through the roof. It's their highest viewed show in 6 years. One of them was. So it worked out.
I think it was the whole week. The views there for each episode were like network highs for 6 years.
Okay. Gotcha. So yeah, it, well played by a Berlanti and crew. It did. We'll see how those numbers kind of translate, this week, and see if a lot of those people stuck around. So,
and it's one more thing with the ratings part. It's interesting because of the fact that, you know, I'm not sure about Supergirl, but we have, like, I think this was the mid-season finale for Flash. I think it's like this week or next week is the mid-season finale for Arrow. And then same thing with Legends.
Yes.
Like there's not too much for them, you know, episodes left. So even for like a, you know, carryover, it seems like they did it late to like be like, for people to be like, oh my gosh, I gotta watch this. You know, continue watching, you know, Legends of Tomorrow or Flash or Arrow or whatever they're not watching now.
Well, what's interesting is on the CW app, they've gone back and they usually have a rolling like few days, but they're going back and you can see the, like the first couple of episodes. I saw that for Supergirl. I'm going to assume if they have any brains in their head, they would do that for all of them. So that people can, after they pulled in that major audience, to give people a look at, okay, well, here's where things started this season. So,
oh, yeah, especially, especially with Legends, I know Legends is going to be moving to
Tuesdays
after the Flash.
Yep.
Because No Tomorrow
got canceled.
Apparently is not going to last tomorrow. No. But even then,
there
it's
is
not,
no
it's
tomorrow.
Only, yeah. Yeah, this is true. As Anessa said in the most goth voice or impression ever.
There is no tomorrow. But, I'm not going to sound happy saying it. Like, no, there is no tomorrow. Yay! Well,
I mean, if you saw the show, it wouldn't be that far from saying that. And this is as a person who watched all but the last two episodes. But no, and even then, it's not going to be like a permanent move because of the fact that iZombie is coming back. So it's only going to be there for maybe a month on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And from what I heard, the ratings for Legends is at a questionable point for the CW.
Yeah. Yeah.
For them getting back for season three.
Yeah. So this was a good boon for them if they can hold on to a portion of those viewers. So that would be very sad to see that show go because they're doing a lot of wonderful things with
and
that show.
And you can tell better stories over 4 hours, you know, 4 hour long episodes as opposed to two or three. I mean, you know, essentially this one was, you know, three parts, even though they say they're including Supergirl, but it was really just wrap up and you saw a little, you know, portal in the middle of the episode. And then at the end, oh, hey, here's Flash and here's Barry Allen and Vibe. I can't think why I'm blanking on his name, Cisco. And, you know, okay, hey, come with us, sort of deal. But, I mean, they could tell, you know, Greg Berlanti and company, Mark Guggenheim, all them guys have done a great job in picking stories to tell for their crossover events that are both monumental in the history of DC Comics, but obscure enough to where the people who don't know the history, and myself included, because I come from Marvel, you know, Marvel was my first love, and DC, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, they have more than Batman and stuff like that.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering with, especially in Flash, how we've got, Alchemy, Dr. Alchemy.
Yeah.
Kind of restoring powers to people. In the Invasion series, the meta bomb was altered and it actually created more metas on Earth after it was dropped. So I was kind of wondering if they were going to bring about a new way to create meta humans other than, oh, we were around Central City at the time. Cause that's going to wear thin at a certain point. So
yeah,
we'll have to see what happens there. So yeah, so that was Invasion by CW, and it well worth the watch. If you get the CW app or if you've DVR'd it, definitely watch it because it was very interesting. And what was also kind of cool is the week before, Kevin Smith did the Flash episode. So we got the episode where we get to see where Savitar has grabbed Barry by the throat is where Kevin Smith's episode picked up. And then the following week, the episode that kicked off Invasion on Supergirl was the episode that he did. And in an interview, Kevin Smith said that if you look closely, his daughter Harley Quinn Smith appears in that episode because they needed a stand-in for a 17-year-old girl. He's like, oh, I have one of those. And so Harley Quinn Smith was just like, oh God, I have to be in that. So she got to be in it. And Jason Mewes was in in a different episode.
Yeah, Jason was in last year's Flash episode
that he did. Yeah, so he's brought some of his peeps with him, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that's always cool to see. And you know, from watching, you know, Comic Book Men, this past episode they had the Yoga Hosers premiere for Kevin's birthday, and they had shared a story about the villain in there called the Bratzy. Yeah. And how they designed the suit for Jay to wear, but Jay couldn't wear it, so it ended up being Kevin playing the Bratzy. But the makeup artist, he designed it, and he goes, you know, to keep himself, you know, engaged and wanting to do something different, he pictured Kevin naked when he was designing the Bratzy uniform. And then Kevin's like, oh, Jay can't do it, he's, you know, sick or whatever. And so I'll do it. And then the costume designer goes, we don't need the fat suit anymore.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, there you go.
On that note, I
did watch Yoga Hosers, and it was actually quite a fun film. So yeah, anyways,
I'm probably going to watch it here soon.
We've gone astray.
Askew, if you will.
I think that we've, there you go. Nice. Well played, Gregor. Yeah, so that wraps up our picks for pretty much the the three major shows that had the invasion storyline in them.
Yep. So Gregor had The Trees, and then
Trees by Warren Ellis.
Yes, The Trees by Warren Ellis. Aliens that are hanging out on Earth as kind of stationary peeps. And then we all talked about the three episodes, The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow crossover with The Invasion. We are the Else Nerds.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. We would like to thank Retvard von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for providing our new closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. Final thoughts?
I'm going to be watching Flash after this.
I'm going to be watching Arrow.
Nice.
I'm going to be watching Flash because that's what's going to be on the TV.
It's a funny thing about living together.
It is. So, all right. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Peace.
Bye.
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 Thanks, Gregor.
You're welcome.
You sounded like a sad goose.
I know.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.